What is up, and welcome back to another episode of the Wizards Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Finberg. In today's episode, we're going to be breaking down another loss for the Wizards. This one, a 138-113 thrashing at the hands of the Cleveland Cavaliers. An expected loss, especially considering the injury report, and we'll get into that in a couple of moments. A valiant effort. I mean, obviously, the score isn't going to reflect that. I thought the Wizards competed pretty well through three quarters, considering the circumstances, considering who was out and who wasn't, considering people coming back from injuries, a lot of people making the Wizards debuts, and against the Cleveland team that's been playing really well with James Harden making his home debut, I thought that the score didn't necessarily reflect the effort and sort of the fight that this team showed, the compete that it showed in this one. But nonetheless, the Wizards fall 138-113. It's their third straight loss. They fall to 14-39 at the All-Star break. They'll have 29 games left, and I'll break down those final 29 games. But first, I want to sort of get into tonight. I mean, the Wizards are in an age where tanking is very apparent. The Wizards have had a unique approach to it. I think, honestly, compared to some other teams, they've had a better approach to it than most. I mean, you have Utah, who is playing Markkanen and Jaren. They're winning games, and then by the fourth quarter, they're benching them, and it's pretty blatant when they lose those games. They beat Miami the other night, but they lost to Orlando. It's pretty blatant to see that they're trying to lose, or at least they're not doing everything that they can to win. Their head coach isn't even calling timeouts when he probably should be challenging close calls, etc., to stop runs. So Utah has been pretty blatant, and that's why there's been a lot of dialogue. The niche NBA fan has sort of called out the Wizards. I mean, I've called them out because they are blatantly tanking, but it's funny how they've sort of dodged these bullets, and like all of the mainstream media talk has been about the Utah Jazz, even though the Wizards were the first team this year to bench their starters for most of the second half to try to lose games. I think they weren't talked about because the two games that they had done that against Detroit and against Sacramento, they somehow found ways to win. So maybe that's why they viewed it, avoided sort of the wrath of NBA fans and NBA Twitter. But they've been doing it. And it's clear that like they're, I think what you'll see from the Wizards down the stretch is like they won't originally report all of these guys injured. So you have this like, you know, shopping list of guys that are out on the injury report. Like for today's game, for instance, against Cleveland, they obviously listed Anthony Davis, Trae Young, Cam Whitmore, and D'Angelo Russell is out. That none of those were surprises, right? You know, Whitmore's out for the year. Trae Young, it was already mentioned, he'll be out through the All-Star break. Anthony Davis is supposed to still be out into early March based on his diagnosis before the trade. And obviously, you have D'Angelo Russell, who's going to possibly be bought out, and he's not with the team. But you had some other stuff like Bilal Coulibaly, Keyshawn George, I think Anthony Gill as well, all questionable for this one. But they were upgraded to available in the morning. So it wasn't the most extensive injury report. It wasn't one where it was like, right when this comes out, you're going to call the Wizards for out for tanking. But then they slowly added Tristan Vukcevic, who had an illness. And again, I'm not saying any of these injuries are like phantom or fluke injuries or they're made up. Again, I don't know enough. This is pure speculation. But he was a late add to the injury report, questionable with an illness. He was eventually ruled out for this game. And then Alex Saar, about an hour later, was quietly added to the injury report, I believe with right hamstring tightness. And the Wizards didn't tweet any of those out. Like the main account, excuse me, didn't tweet out, and they typically do, but they typically tweet out like Alex Saar, right hamstring tightness has been added, or Dresden Vukcevic illness has been added to the injury report. But they didn't do that for either. They sneakily did it, and then both were eventually ruled out for the game. So maybe that's their way of doing it. Apart from that, a lot of their players actually played in this one. Keyshawn played a decent bit. Same with Bilal. Trey Johnson returned from his ankle injury, you know, with just one game before the All-Star break. That was surprising to me. We'll get more into his performance. But they like slowly and sort of sneakily added those guys, and then they went into this game with zero available centers. No AD, no Saar, no Tristan. Tallest available guy was Will Riley, who's 6'9". He's listed as a guard and plays on the wing, so he's by no means a center. Their starting five, you had 6'7", Jahmyr Watkins. You had 6'8", Keyshawn George. Like, George was like your biggest guy and played some center. I mean, Trey Johnson was matching up down low against Jared Allen for rebounds, for inside positioning. So like the Wizards with their injury report, I think they did a good job of it, but they did well enough to basically make sure that they were going to lose this game with still playing some of their guys. And I think you'll sort of see that chess match where you sort of tote the line of blatantly tanking while also tanking within the rules of the NBA. I mean, you saw Utah has already sort of gotten a nudge. They listed Markkanen as out tonight against Sacramento with rest, and then an hour later was like, no, he's actually available. Maybe the NBA nudged them and was like, yo, guys, like we can't allow you to just blatantly do this. Like, at least if he doesn't have an injury, you need to play him. And so they ended up just switching it. Maybe you'll see that later down the line. But I think what you'll see from the Wizards is against really bad teams, like you saw against the Brooklyn Nets, they won't play a lot of their guys. They'll have random hamstring tightness or quad contusion or whatever injury they list them as. They'll probably be out. And even if they play, they probably won't play much. And that's your games like you saw against Brooklyn. They got two in a row against Indiana after the break. Utah is two more games against them. Like against the tanking teams, the bad teams, you'll probably see them rest a lot of their players or put them on the injury report. But against teams that they're going to lose to regardless, like Cleveland, if they play teams like Denver or I would say Detroit, but you already saw what happened. But teams like Detroit still, they'll play more of their regular starters and all that because they know no matter if they play them or not, they're probably still going to lose. And so it's like picking and choosing your spots. And by the way, I know how ridiculous this sounds. Like I'm fully serious when I say this, that like there needs to be a method to the tanking madness, and the Wizards seemingly have that method. It's very sad. It's a very sad state of the league where you have the bottom half. It's about roughly six or seven teams that have no interest in winning games and will actively sabotage their own lineup and fill their injury report to do so. Obviously, it's a bad look for the league, but like you can't penalize these bad teams for doing it if it's within the rules. Like Adam Silver's going to get questioned. No, like of course he's going to get questioned about it All-Star weekend. We'll see what he says about it. It doesn't, it's funny because like you had all these Nets fans that were crying that the Wizards were doing it and then crying that other teams like Indiana tonight was doing it. But the Nets rolled out Noah Clowney. I'm pretty sure Claxton didn't play. Michael Porter didn't play tonight against the Pacers. Like the Nets aren't as egregious, but like they're still tanking. They're still doing it to a certain extent. Indiana Zubats was like pretty much available and was going to return from his ankle injury when he was on the Clippers, gets traded to the Pacers who are tanking. And they have a protected pick now, and now they're saying, hey, he's going to be out through the All-Star break and maybe even more. And he probably, honestly, at this rate, won't play much, if at all, for the Pacers. That's tanking. It's the same thing that people have called the Wizards out for with Anthony Davis, with Trae Young. Same thing the Raptors did with Brandon Ingram last year. Same thing that they're going to do, the Jazz will probably do with Jaren. Like, a lot of these teams know what they're doing. They're blatantly tanking. But don't get mad at the teams, right? Get mad at the league. And the league's clearly not going to do anything. Because what the Wizards are doing, at least, and that's all I can speak for, is within the rules. Like they're playing their guys, they're not making up injuries. They're probably just extending the timeline of these injuries as far as they can probably get away with. And so that's what the Wizards did tonight. Obviously, no available centers, and it was 14 to 6 on the glass in the first quarter. They had no answer for Jared Allen, and they knew that going in. I don't think that they were concerned that that was a case. They knew that was going to happen when they ruled Sarr and Tristan out, and AD was already out. You had Trey Johnson, who returned from injury, guarding Jared Allen on a lot of these switches. I mean, the Wizards got blitzed as a result. It was 21-5 pretty early. The Wizards fought back. I think they made it like a 7-point game at a certain point. It was like 82-75, even in the second half. For the most of the third quarter, they were competitive. But obviously, given the circumstances, given the lineup, given the injuries, the score won't reflect it. But they were pretty solid against a pretty good Cavs team. I mentioned Trey Johnson returned from injury. He had missed six games in a row with that sprained left ankle. I thought he'd be held out through the All-Star break, return for the Rising Stars, but I guess they wanted to look at him before. He returned for tonight's game. Obviously was a little rusty. Again, hadn't played in a bit. He started, played just 18 minutes. I'm sure he was on a restriction. 10 points on 4 of 13 from the field, 1 of 6 from 3, 3 boards, 2 assists. Again, and I'm going to talk about O'Reilly in the same way. Again, Trey Johnson had some open looks, especially from three. They're looks that he typically knocks down. He was short on a couple of them, pretty long on a couple of them. I think, again, not too concerned. First came back in a bit, shaking off some rust. The looks he got were good. Didn't think they were too many forced looks. And so I wouldn't be too concerned by the stat line. Maybe the Wizards just wanted to give him that chance to shake the rust off in a game. They obviously had no business winning or pretty much being close in. So I don't mind that he played. I thought, on defense, he got beat a decent bit. There was a play in particular. I don't know how he didn't get a call for a foul, but just got beat clean off the dribble, I think, by Mitchell. He ended up getting a steal, but it was a blatant foul. He just kind of like hacked him because he was out of position. So I think offensively, I liked the way that he got to his spots, just didn't make the shots he typically makes. Defensively, I think he's still got a ways to go. I think a lot of that is obviously still working his way back from that ankle, but it's also deeper than that. And obviously, that's an area that he's got to get better at, but not too concerned about him. Will Riley as well, he'd been killing it. He just, I think, turned 20 years old I think yesterday. He at just 4 points, he was 1 of 12 from the field, 0 of 4 from three. And I'm going to say the same thing again. If you just watch the box score, which I'm sure most of you guys are doing, because who is watching this game on a random Wednesday when it's not competitive and they're really not playing many of their great players? That's what I'm here for, right? Will Riley got good looks. His only bucket was a nice drive to the rim where he dunked it. Open looks from three, just missed them. Open looks in the lane that he had been making in recent games, just missed them. Didn't think the defense particularly affected it. I think Will Riley just missed his shots. And it's okay in a small sample size for this to happen. And it's especially forgivable when he's been as good as he's been for the last 5 to 7 games. And so, again, not too concerned. The stat lines won't be too pretty for him and fellow rookie Trey Johnson. But if you watch the game, I think you'd be pretty content. The Wizards are probably pretty content with the looks that they were able to create for themselves and for others, and they'll drop at some point. The one rookie that did have a really good game, though, that they drafted was Jahmyr Watkins, who I think career high 16 points. Forgive me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure it's a career high. 7 of 16 from the field, 3 boards, 2 assists, made 2 of his 8 threes, not the greatest shooting percentage. 1 steal, 1 block. That's typically a pretty emphatic block late in the fourth quarter. Again, I liked, he had a big dunk in the third quarter. I like when Jameer's aggressive and going to the rim. Eventually in his career, he's going to have to be a floor spacer. Early in his career, Lu Dort was a really good on-ball defender, but he couldn't make a three to save his life. I remember when they were in the bubble, in the playoffs, OKC was, teams would be inside of the paint when guarding Lu Dort. And now he's a pretty good 3-point shooter, and they really can't leave him open from the perimeter. And so I'm not too concerned about the percentage with Jahmyr. I'm glad that he's shooting the threes at least, and he's taking them. And they'll fall at some point. But I thought offensively, I really like the aggression that he showed in a game where a lot of their offensive creators and scorers weren't available or didn't play much in the second half. And again, the defense spoke for itself and continues to speak for itself with Jahmyr in terms of getting in passing lanes, etc. So again, the rookies, some of them didn't shoot the best percentage-wise, but again, I'm not too concerned with any of that, and thought Jahmyr played one of the better games he's played in the NBA so far. Going down the line, I mean, Sharif Cooper had some pretty like, oh, that was a pretty cool sequence type moments tonight. He's had a bunch of them, throughout the time that he's been with the Wizards. But tonight, I mean, in particular, he started, I think, 4 of 4 from the field and 3 of 3 from three. I think two at least of his three threes were pretty good looks from the corner that he drilled. He was able to get to the rim. I enjoyed how he scored the basketball in some pretty impressive ways. He's a really tiny guy. I mean, he had a pretty big block again in the fourth quarter on Thomas Bryant, former Wizard, which if you watch Thomas Bryant play any basketball for the Wizards, him getting blocked by a guy who's like 6 foot is the least shocking thing ever. Thomas Bryant missing wide open threes again, the least shocking thing ever. But I want to make this about Sharif Cooper because I mean, it's pretty impressive. A guy at his size amongst the trees and amongst NBA talent is able to get a shot off as clean and as quick as he can and able to score at the rate he can. He's small, but he gets to the rim and I mean, 6 boards, 5 assists, got into the lane, got his teammates involved. Really liked what I saw from him and have liked what I've seen from him in these extended minutes, on this two-way contract. Didn't see much of him earlier in the season, but again, I don't know if he's going to be part of this team's future. I don't even know if we'll be here next year, but I do know that it's pretty impressive for him to be able to score at his size, and he's fun to watch as well. I mean, Justin Champagne, 12 points, 9 boards, 7 of them were offensive. He just fights on the offensive glass, again in passing lanes with 2 steals. There was a moment I think in the first quarter where Justin got a board, went up for a layup, and got hacked in the face no call. And then later down the floor, he got the offensive rebound, thought he got fouled. The ball went out of bounds. They called it off the Wizards and off Champagne. He ended up clapping in Tony Brothers' face, which, again, that is a blatant technical. Got teed up for it. I don't blame him, though. I mean, that was the most emotion I've seen from Champagne. I mean, he was just pointing to his face at Tony Brothers and just like, how did you not call a foul? Like, I'm bleeding on my nose. I got hit in the face, and you somehow didn't call that a foul. Like, what are you looking at? It was a valid crash out. I mean, I think basically Justin wanted to just showcase, like, look, give me a foul. And sometimes you got to get a tee to do so. And so I think that was completely fair from Justin. 12 points again, didn't take any free throws, which isn't surprising, given the whistle that he gets. But 7 offensive rebounds again, that's also not surprising considering the effort that he gives on a nightly basis. Apart from that, looking down my notes, Jaden Hardy made his Wizards debut today. He's wearing number 8, basically just switched numbers and sort of roles with Malachi Branham, who I think was waived by Dallas, or traded, I think, to Charlotte and eventually waived by them to create a roster spot. But Jaden Hardy made his debut. He started off pretty well, cooled off towards the end, played just 15 minutes off the bench, 11 points on 3 of 7 from the field, 3 of 5 from 3, 1 board, 1 assist. He's a microwave scorer. And when I was talking to my friends Bryson and Henry on their pod the other day, we talked a lot about how Jaden Hardy is this like microwave scorer where he's going to make some plays where you're like, wow, that was pretty impressive. It was pretty athletic. And he's going to make some plays where you're sort of like scratching your head and saying, why would you shoot that? Or why did you think that was a good pass? He had one in particular. Will Riley was wide open on a lob and Hardy just sailed the ball over his head and out of bounds for a turnover. And then he had a sequence where he made a couple threes in a row. And so you're going to get some really good with him. You're going to get some pretty bad when it comes to Jaden Hardy. But like I mentioned, microwave score. I'm not looking for him as a guard to set his teammates up. I'm looking for him to sort of score the basketball, that scorer's mindset, and I saw that tonight. He did have a nice drop off past Anthony Gill for a layup. That was his lone assist. But again, I wouldn't expect too much of that. I'd expect a lot more of the 3-point attempts. 3 of 5 from three is a pretty good rate for him. Finished with 11 points. So again, didn't see anything I was surprised by from him, but it was nice to see at least him make his debut. I wouldn't be surprised if out of those four players, obviously they waived Exum and they're going to buy out probably D'Lo. If I wouldn't be surprised if Jaden Hardy is the only one of those four players acquired in that trade that you see at any point this season. Again, there's a lot to be determined with Anthony Davis still, but Will Dawkins obviously said that he expects or said it's highly likely that both him and Trae Young play this season. But there's also two things. That number one is the hurdle that he mentioned, where he has a big doctor's appointment coming up over the All-Star break, and surgery is still an option for him on his hand. Like, that's possible. And then you also got the tanking element, where the Wizards don't necessarily benefit too much from Anthony Davis seeing the floor this year. I don't think the same can be said for Trae Young. I don't know how long they can, kind of extend that injury with the MCL and the quad contusion, but I think it wouldn't be a surprise to me if Jaden Hardy's the only one that plays from the players that they acquired this year. Derrick Richmond also made his, I guess, Wizards slash NBA debut, undrafted out of St. John's. Also played college ball at Seton Hall and Syracuse, I believe. He's 24 years old. He's a guard, 6'5", undrafted free agent that spent summer league with the Wiz and have been spending time with Gogo. I think like 8.5 points, 3 boards in 23 games with Gogo this season. But he was recently signed to a 10-day contract. I'm pretty sure the Wizards currently have 13 standard NBA contracts and they have 3 2-way deals. And so they can sign 2 more standard deals. And instead, I think you can only have 14 total days in a row with less than 14 standard contracts on your team. But the Wizards are sort of circumventing that with these 10 days. You saw Scalabissier a couple weeks ago get his, that expired. Keyshawn Gilbert got one recently. He's on the tail end of that. And so now they're bringing in Kidari Richmond on a 10-day to fill the final roster spot. And I think you'll see this with a lot of these go-go guys, that they'll sort of filter them in on these 10-day deals to not have to sign anyone for the time being to a standard deal, But obviously, to give them some run, like they need some bodies to eat some minutes the final 29 games of the year, especially considering, again, they're tanking, they don't want to win, and they don't want to play their starters if they don't have to. And so I think you'll see a lot of Richmond minutes. Keyshawn Gilbert's been playing a decent bit. You saw Scala BCA play heavy minutes when he was on a 10-day. So I think this will be a pretty common theme for them. But I think Richmond made a three, and so I think he finished with, what, 5 points, 2 of 2 from the field in 6 minutes. Not the worst NBA debut. He's a pretty intriguing prospect. Again, I don't think he's part of this team's future, but I mean, cool to see at least that he's getting some NBA minutes. Apart from that, we didn't really talk about any of the starters apart from Trey Johnson. Paolo Coulibaly, 13 points on 5 of 9 from the field. Again, I sort of enjoyed the way that he scored. Was able to get to the rim, had a sequence where he got to the rim for a dunk, and then got a steal. I think passed it off and ended up getting an assist on a Keyshawn three. That was pretty nice sequence for him. I thought he was under control. 24 minutes, not the worst offensive performance for him. And then again on the defensive end, 2 steals and 1 block in 24 minutes. The defense continues to be pretty elite. You had some moments on Harden where he fouled, and were they fouls? I don't know. It's Harden, and so take that for what it's worth. But apart from that, I thought he actually had a pretty good game. Bob Carrington, 8 points on 4 of 9 from the field, 4 assists, 3 turnovers. Again, I Bub missed all of his threes. He was at his best when he got to the mid-range. Again, like he had a back-to-back possessions where he had a mid-range bucket. Like that's where he needs to live. He can make threes, and I'm fine with him taking them. I want to see him take far less of those transition threes, which he again didn't make one tonight that he made that he took. But he should live in the mid-range, which should open up his ability to knock down the three, which you hope then leads into him getting his feet in the paint and setting up teammates, which is that next step for him as a point guard. But again, not the most incredible performance from him. I already talked about John Muir. The last guy to get to was Keyshawn. It was a really quiet 17, just 4 of 12 from the field. Not the most efficient night for him. 5 boards too. He got to the line 8 times within the game's like first 5 or 6 minutes. Made all 8. Didn't get to the line. After that, had some mid-range shots that I thought he should have made that he missed. So it was a, I mean, he led the Wizards in scoring, but it's a pretty quiet night in terms of leading your team in scoring. I think there's another level that Key can get to, and I think he knows that as well. So, I mean, 17 points is great. Looks good in the box score, but again, I didn't think this was one of his like better games. I like how he got to the line though, if that's any consolation there. Apart from that, again, undermanned Wizards team. Entering the All-Star break now, I believe at 14-39. Looking at some other results around the league as we speak, the Indiana Pacers found a way to go into Brooklyn and knock off the Nets. I'm just seeing this now. That's now final, and so that's 2 in a row for Indiana, who just beat New York. They're now 15-40. The Nets are 15-38, and they both have one more win than the Wizards, who, again, I mentioned, are 14-39. It looks like the Pelicans are going to lose at home, unfortunately, to the Miami Heat. And then you got Sacramento, who's lost 13 in a row. That is somehow down 27 points at halftime on the road against Utah. I don't know if the Kings will win another game all year. They're that bad. And the worst part is like they're not tanking as blatantly as some other teams. They just suck. And so that's again another win for Utah. It's going to be 2 in a row for them, and that's going to put a pretty good night for the Wizards overall in terms of the tanking standings. I'm going to pull those up right now. But right now the Sacramento Kings are 12-43. They're going to be 12-44. The Wizards are 14-39. They have no more games left before the All-Star break. And then you got Indiana at 15 wins, you got New Orleans at 15 wins, and you got Brooklyn at 15 wins. And then after tonight, you'll have Utah at 18 wins. That's pretty good last couple games for the Wizards, who enter with a 3-game losing streak, Indiana on a 2-game winning streak, and New Orleans, who's going to win 2 of 3 entering the break. And so a pretty good result, honestly, tonight for Washington. In terms of the tanking standings, they're now pretty firmly in second place, or at least own second place in terms of the tank standings. And obviously, they want to be as firmly in that bottom four as possible. And the more wins that these teams start to pick up, the better it is for the Washington Wizards. I actually have this right here on my phone. I was going to tweet it out later, but if you're listening to the pod, you'll get it before anyone else. This is sort of a breakdown of Washington's schedule for the final 29 games of the season. 14 home games, 15 road games. 17 of those games for the Wizards are against teams that at the moment of this recording are above 500, and then only 12 are against teams below 500, and then six of those 29 games are against true tanking teams in the bottom six of the standings. You have two against Indiana, a nice back-to-back, I think both at home after the break. You know, I would assume the Wizards win at least one of those, but if you could split, I think that's the best case scenario realistically. You got two more against Utah, one in Washington, one in Utah. Those are going to be some pretty big games between two teams that have top eight picks that they really intend to protect. And then you obviously have one against Brooklyn, which I believe is in Brooklyn, and then you have one against the Pelicans in New Orleans. And so it's not the worst schedule. It's actually a pretty hard schedule, all things considered. New Orleans is trying to win games. The Wizards aren't, so I wouldn't be too concerned there. The game against Brooklyn is on the road. You already lost there. There's one at home, one on the road against Utah, and then two at home against Indiana. You have 17 games against teams above 500 that are going to be competing for something. It's not the worst position for Washington to be in, and especially considering how they're tanking and considering the position they're going to put themselves in before the All-Star break. I think out of the tanking teams, that they're in one of the best spots, especially considering they want to keep their pick. And so, you know, obviously the Wizards are bad record-wise. 14-39 isn't good, but it's going to be pretty. I wouldn't say sprint to the finish line. It's going to be like you're gonna be like crawling through the mud to get to the finish line if you're a Wizards fan. Like, it's not fun. It's not fun looking at injury reports and seeing that all of these guys that you want to see play aren't playing, even though you know why they're not playing. It's not fun to see them actively trying to lose games. It's not fun. But at the end of the day, I think when you get to May, you're going to be pretty happy that the Wizards did it. When you're watching the lottery, they have a bottom four record, and you obviously are nervous that they won't or will get a top pick, but you're not as nervous as you would be if there was a possibility that they didn't get any pick at all. And so I think that's what they're gunning for. And if you're upset now, that's valid. But I think you'll thank them for it by that time in May. So that's going to do it for this episode of the Wizards podcast. Wizards fall 138-113. They're 14-39 entering the All-Star break. Really bad record, but they're looking pretty in the tank standings, looking like they're probably going to keep their pick. And so I think they're happy for that. And I think Wizards fans probably should be too. So that's going to do it for this episode of the Wizards podcast. The next time you'll hear from me is probably in a couple of days. We'll do like a mid-season All-Star break recap and sort of give my thoughts on the state of this team now and sort of what to look forward to the rest of the year. Maybe I'll have a guest, maybe I won't. But that's going to wrap it up for this episode of the Wizards podcast. Thanks for listening, as always. Go Wiz.